He's Darrell Ryder. I'm Andy Baskin. I got to tell you, when I found out this morning that we were filling in for Ken and Anthony, I was super excited when I saw that Dane Brugler was on the list from The Athletic. He has the beast, and man, he knows what's going on when it comes to what we're just talking about what's going to happen with guys coming out from college that are going to make it into the NFL. Dane is on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Dane, always a pleasure to talk to you. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. Good morning, guys.
Good morning to you. All right, I'm going to start right here with something that I just think is super interesting. When I'm watching Ohio State play in the national championship, I'm watching them all season long. I'm looking at the defense, and not to mention they've got two running backs that could have an impact in the draft too. But the defense, you're talking about maybe 9 of the 11 guys that have the opportunity to probably play in the NFL next year. Just kind of give me your gist on Ohio State and some of these guys that we could be seeing coming up in the draft.
I'm sure we have. I mean, it's unbelievable.
We could go 4 hours. If you want to go 4 hours on this, Dane, I'd be happy to talk to you about it for 4 hours. I'm just kidding.
I mean, to properly give Ohio State its due in terms of NFL talent, we might need it. I mean, they're very likely going to set the record for draft picks in a single draft, the modern-day record. It's 15. Georgia set that a couple of years ago. I think a conservative number is probably going to be around 16, maybe more. Depends on some of the underclassmen. Like, what does Sonny Styles do? The really talented linebacker who I think would really benefit from another year. But, you know, coming off a national title, some of these guys might feel like, all right, this is the time to make that jump. But, a lot of these seniors would have been drafted last year. We know that. Look at the entire defensive line. All those guys have a chance to be top 100 picks in a few months. What Cody Simon did this year, if he's in last year's draft, borderline draft pick, but he comes back and just totally reinvents his draft stock. Now he's probably somewhere in the top 5 rounds. And then in the secondary, the only guy that's not going to get drafted is the best player of the entire defense, Caleb Downs. So it's really impressive to, you know, first of all, that they paid it off and they won it all, but just the amount of talent they have on this roster and really both sides of the ball. It's, like I said, it's going to be a record-breaking class for the Buckeyes.
What did Will Howard do for his draft stock?
Certainly didn't hurt it. Look, the whole reason Ohio State went into the transfer portal and moved on from Kyle McCord is because they wanted more mobility, right? And I think that that really showed throughout the year with Will Howard. And was he perfect? Of course not. But for a guy that had less than a year in the program to come in and get better throughout the season, I think that really stands out and showed that he was a really good fit for what they wanted to do. You know, RPO-based offense, a lot of design rollouts, waggles, just try to move that launch point and really give those routes an extra beat to get open. And he executed it really well. I think what stands out the most with Will Howard is the mental toughness. If you're going to play quarterback in the NFL, failure is part of the job description. And you have to be mentally tough. You have to be able to bounce back. And that against the Penn State, on the Penn State tape, throwing that pick 6 in the first drive and then to bounce back the next drive and lead a touchdown, that right there is like, okay, there's something to this guy where most guys are going to wilt under that kind of pressure on the road, your home state school, to go out and make that type of mistake. To bounce back is really impressive. And then we saw it throughout the playoffs. The Michigan game obviously wasn't great, but that's not all on Will Howard. There's a lot of factors there. But the run they went on in the playoff, Will Howard was a big part of that. And I think you see the physical traits, the size, the mobility, not an A-plus arm, but a good enough arm. And then his accuracy. The decision-making can be a little bit up and down. Sometimes he'll predetermine what he's doing, and that'll lead to mistakes. But for the most part, he's taking care of the football, and that mobility aspect only helps. So, yeah, I mean, we're looking at a guy that before the year was probably in that 5th, 6th round range. Now he's got a chance to go on day 2.
Dane, how many first-rounders do you think Ohio State has?
Yeah, it'll be interesting because the guy that might be drafted first is probably the player that we didn't see a lot because he was injured, and that's Josh Simmons, the left tackle, who went down with that non-con knee injury against Oregon. But, you know, as long as he is fully healthy, and obviously we'll find that out at the combine, as long as the knee's fully healthy, he could be the first offensive lineman off the board. So we'll see what happens with Josh Simmons. It's not a great wide receiver class. So Emeka Ebuka, who has mostly second round grades, good chance he goes in the first round. And then, you know, I think, you know, you look at the defensive line, JTT, to me, he's the better prospect of the two defensive ends. Jack Sawyer, very good player. He's going to be off the board in the top 60. But Tui Malo, he has just a little bit more with what NFL teams are looking for. I think he has a chance to go in the first round. And then Tyleek Williams, one of the better run-defending defensive tackles this year. He makes a difference. He's what a lot of teams are looking for to shore up their run defense in the middle. So what I named four players right there, I think that is a conservative number, I think.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, too. I think the other thing, and as we start talking about the Browns in the draft, too, look, they're probably going to draft a running back, and I think it's going to be interesting to see who goes first between Trevion Henderson or Quinshon Judkins, because both those guys can bring something to the table for any NFL team that they're going to play. Just your thoughts on those two guys and their impact they could have in the NFL, and could they be prospects for the Browns?
Yeah, and I think it's less about who is better and more about what kind of style are you looking for, because all these guys are different. You know, it's like we talk about wide receivers and we rank them, and meanwhile, these guys are all so different. You know, a 6'4", 210-pound X is not the same as a 5'11", speedy slot receiver. So even though we're ranking these guys in the same bucket, they're very different with what they offer, and teams are going to look at these guys differently because of what they already have on the roster and what they're trying to build for their scheme. So it's the same thing with running backs. You know, you do have some guys like obviously Ashton Jeanty at the top, who it doesn't matter what scheme or what type of running back you're looking for, he's going to be a fit for whatever you want to do. But for some of these other guys, especially on day two, Quinshon Judkins, Trevion Henderson, the list goes on. The running back is the deepest position we have this year. I mean, there are legitimate 30 running backs with draftable grades this year. Not all 30 are going to get drafted, which means we're going to have a ton of steals on day three and then into free agency. But this is a really good running back class if you have a need there and you want to get better. So I think that, yeah, there's a good chance we're going to see the Browns look at a running back, maybe even on day two. And that's where I think both Trevion Henderson, Quinshon Judkins will go. Henderson, he's more of the – if you want to get him out in space, that open field vision, let him use his speed. Judkins, more of a between-the-tackles grinder. Doesn't have the same type of speed, but not a slug either by any means. So, yeah, both these guys are going to be in the NFL next year and have a chance to be a productive part of a really productive group of running backs that I think we're going to be talking about this group for a long time. That's how deep it is in the draft.
Game Brugler of The Athletic, also the author of The Beast, also known as My Draft Bible, joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Dane, I have concerns about the Browns' ability to find a franchise quarterback in this draft. With that number two pick, I have questions about Cam Ward, Shedeur Sanders. Are they worthy of such a selection? Where do you fall on the Ward and Sanders conversation? Is it more hype or is it more substance in that they can be franchise quarterbacks?
Yeah, it's a difficult discussion because, you know, if these guys were in last year's draft, they're fighting it out for quarterback 7 and 8. You know, like it's just last year's quarterback class was so much better than what we have this year. But it's also pretty light at the top in terms of high end talent. So, you know, if you look at Cam Ward and say, okay, I think he can be an NFL starter, which I do, you know, you can talk yourself into taking him early. But I think it's just about getting it right, you know, and when you look at these quarterbacks, if you are able to convince yourself that, hey, look what he offers. We think that he can be an NFL starter. We feel like he can help us compete for divisions. Then you have to take a long look at that. And if I had a bet on one of these quarterbacks, it would be Cam Ward, just because he's gotten better every year. You know, he's in a wing T offense in high school. It goes to Incarnate Word in Washington State and Miami, and you see improvement, development every single part of his journey. But, you know, he still plays way too loose compared to what I want from the quarterback position. And that's part of his development and getting better and taking better care of the football. But he's elusive in the pocket. He creates explosive plays. There's definitely something there. So if I had a bet on one of these quarterbacks, it would be Cam Ward. You know, I'm not a big Shedeur Sanders fan. I do think that he can potentially start in this league. But the way he plays, he just doesn't really have the physical traits that I'm looking for to maximize what I want from my quarterback position. I think a lot of teams are going to look at this quarterback class and say, you know what, let's get our tackle in the top 10. Let's get our pass rusher in the top 10. And we'll wait the day two to get a quarterback, which you don't usually hear in most drafts. But, you know, you look at some of the quarterbacks on day two, whether it's, you know, a flyer on Jalen Milrow or, you know, a guy like Will Howard, Kyle McCord, Tyler Shuck, Quinn Ewers, Jackson Dart. You know, there are some interesting quarterback names where you're not paying premium price, and it's not going to stop you from going and drafting a quarterback in the first round next year if that's what's going to be best for your offense. So this is going to be a really interesting, and most years you say, you know what, quarterback desperation, teams are going to take these guys early. I'm just not convinced that's how it's going to be. This might be more like the Kenny Pickett year where all through the draft process, people were saying, oh, they're going to go. These quarterbacks are going to go. Malik Willis, he's going to go number two to the Lions. And, you know, but this year, I wouldn't be surprised if we see it a little more spread out. You know, maybe Cam Ward still goes one. You know, maybe he goes three to the Giants. You never, you know, with the Raiders at six, who knows what they're going to do. You know, the Steelers could be in the mix if they look to trade up. So it's going to be really interesting, these quarterbacks at the top, because it's not as simple as last year where obviously these guys are going to go one, two, three. It's just a matter of the order they're going to go. That's not the case this year. I think it's perfectly understandable for you to have reservations about this group.
My worst fear is the Browns take a quarterback at two. So they did elevate Tommy Rees to be their offensive coordinator. Everybody wants to put the eyes now on Alabama's Jalen Monroe and tying them together that, you know, because they elevated Rees, they're going to go for Monroe. Just what is your take on what you've seen from him and his prospects?
I don't use the word special lightly when it comes to draft prospects, but he is a special athlete. 6'1", 225 pounds. He's going to run in the 4.3s. And when you see that speed up close and personal, it just hits different. And so now, obviously, speed is not the number one reason you should be drafting a quarterback, but it's part of his package of skills. He has a rocket arm. And I think teams are really encouraged by just the makeup of the person, the player. I mean, just super smart guy, how disciplined he is as a person, you know, coming from a military family and all that. Like he's the type of guy you want in your locker room. It's just, okay, do you feel confident that you can develop his passing skills? So, you know, his footwork is repeatable. You're not making his receivers work for the football. You know, I'm down here in Dallas for the East-West Shrine game all week, and then I'm going to Mobile from here, and Milrow's going to be at the Senior Bowl. And that'll be a big opportunity for him just to show consistency. He's not going to be a guy that comes in from day one and is the savior for your team. Like, that's not the expectation here. The expectation would be you draft him in the second round, like Jalen Hurts, and you give him 2-3 years to develop, and you just hope to see progress over that time. And can he do it? It's certainly a possible outcome, but, you know, it's a fork in the road, and, you know, we'll see, you know, what type of coaching he gets. But even, regardless of where Jalen Milrow ends up, hopefully that fan base doesn't think it's going to be, you know, a quick fix, because it's going to take time for him to develop and get him to where you want him to be a consistent NFL starter.
Dane, I got about a minute. Play Andrew Berry for me. Are you drafting a quarterback at two? And what would you do with that pick?
If Cam Ward's available at two, I'm definitely thinking about it. We're having long conversations about how he fits in the offense we want to run and, you know, is he worth it? But at the end of the day, I'm probably landing on the top non-quarterback on my board. We have the number two pick. We have a chance to get arguably the best player in the draft. So whether that's Travis Hunter from Colorado or Abdul Carter from Penn State, I'm getting one of those two guys. And my defense is immediately better We feel like we have a cornerstone type of player that we can build around, and we feel like we're really maximizing the number two pick in the draft.
Dane, what's the deal with the Beast? How can we get it?
Have to have a subscription to The Athletic. It's going to be digital and PDF this year. A lot of cool things. A lot of resources behind it this year, even more so than past years. So I'm excited to release that here right around April 1st. And so we're getting closer and closer.
All right. Thanks for educating all of us, Danny. I appreciate it. I know when we take a look through it, we're always like, man, he does a lot of work on this thing. Thank you, Dane.
Anytime. Thanks, guys.
All right. Dane Brugler from The Athletic. He's got the Beast. You heard it. You want all the inside scoop.
Going to be in an NFL front office someday. I'm convinced of it.
Good stuff. I mean, I'm just telling you, it's a Bible. No, it really, really is.
Nobody scouts college talent better than Dane Brugler in our business.
Dane Brugler was just with us from The Athletic. He writes the Beast. I mean, it is the ultimate guide to the NFL draft. And some interesting points about quarterback. We're going to bring him back up here. Daryl Ryder's in today. I'm Andy Baskin. We're in for Ken and Anthony. They have the day off today. So that plus we are going to talk about the best kept secret in Cleveland sports right now. We're going to talk about that coming up a little bit later. We'll do that maybe in about 20 minutes. Daryl, what did you think of what he had to say about the quarterback situation? Because I'm all on board with some of the things that he said.
I feel vindicated.
Yeah.
Like, I feel, because I have said all along that I have serious reservations about the Browns drafting a quarterback with the second overall pick. I think it's better that it be a meat and potatoes draft, offensive line, defensive line help. Dane mentioned that this is a great draft for defensive linemen. I really like the idea of Carter from Penn State. Drafting him to pair him opposite of Myles Garrett with that number two pick. I also really love the idea of trading down a few slots, picking up an extra first round pick for 2026 and positioning yourself to go ahead and get the guy that might be available in 2026, because I think that it's just going to be a better quarterback class. But what really struck me is that Dane mentioned, If last year's draft class were in this year's class, or included with this year's class, Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders would be the 7th and 8th quarterbacks taken in the class. And that tells me all I need to know, and I feel vindicated.
What do you want the Browns to do? I know it's a little bit early. Yeah, but I mean, like... All right, let me rephrase this. Do you think the
Thanks
Browns...
Thanks for listening.
No, I was listening, but I know we've talked about this a couple times, but do you think the Browns will force themselves to take a quarterback at 2? That's my problem. That's what I'm really... I was going to lead you up to that question. Right. I'm just going to straight up and ask you. Will the Browns force themselves to take a quarterback at 2?
I hope not, but it is a concern. And then I go back to what I've said before. If they do that, they're talking themselves into something, number one. Number two, they're going to repeat the mistake that finds them in the position that they're in right now. And that is an impulsive, I don't want to say last ditch, but emotional, we have to do something decision that led them to give up 6 draft picks and fully guaranteed $230 million to bring Deshaun Watson here, and it's been an unmitigated disaster, right? So I feel like to what Dan was talking about, if they take Cam or Shedeur, which they're not going to be there, but if they were to take them in the second round or something, one of those guys in the second round, I'm not going to kill them for it. But at the same time, this is not the year to be looking for your franchise savior. I mean, even when Dane was talking about Jalen Milroe, he's like, this is a kid that's going to need 2 to 3 years of development behind the scenes. Like, if the Browns do take him or any team takes him, hopefully that fan base is not sitting there saying to themselves, franchise savior is in the house, because that's not the case either. So I really want the Browns to address offensive defensive line at number 2 or wherever they fall, hopefully in the top 10 there with a trade down. I want them to draft one of these running backs, because you've got to replace Nick Chubb. This seems to be the perfect year to do that. This is not the year to draft a wide receiver. Dane just got done telling us about that. Not a great class to do it, so stay away from that position group. I don't know, maybe Andrew Berry trades for a wide receiver for what, the third, fourth, fifth straight offseason, right? It seems like every year, death taxes and Andrew Berry trades for a receiver. But yeah, I really want this to be a meat and potatoes style draft for the Browns because I think that's what they need most. And I don't want them reaching for the quarterback. You're already going to be reaching for a quarterback, Andy, in free agency, because that's all that's available to you are guys that you're going to be reaching for, bringing in reclamation projects that you've got your fingers crossed that Tommy Rees and Kevin Stefanski can squeeze what little good football they have left in them.
Force, I think, is the big word here.
Like, yeah.
I just don't want to see the Browns force themselves into a quarterback at number two that they're just picking a quarterback because they have to pick a quarterback because they don't have to do anything. There are too many other good players in this draft that if you're going to force it, it's just, I don't think it's going to work. We've watched this. You said something early in the show this morning about picking a name. Like, stop picking names for marketing. Or somebody said that this morning, that the Browns can't get – they just need to disconnect. Let's not wake up on draft day and go, well, Shedeur Sanders, man, made headlines for years from a marketing aspect.
We're going to sell a ton of jerseys in the team shop.
It can't be about selling jerseys anymore. Enough. We've seen that already.
You know what sells jerseys? Breaking news for the Cleveland Browns and the folks over at 76 La Groza. Winning games. That's what sells jerseys.
Ryan's in Painesville. Hey, Ryan, hop on in. How are you?
Hey, gents. How are you this morning?
We're good.
So I had actually had a question for Daryl. The more I think about it, you know, I think like a lot of Clevelanders will really do not want them drafting a quarterback at two. And the more I think about it, I thought, you know, Miles had his end-of-the-year conference, and he was talking about how he was going to talk to the front office, see their plans, so he can gauge what he's doing. I can't see Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski selling Shedeur or Cam to him and him being like, I'm on board, let's go. I really think if he's happy with the game plan, they're going to take Hunter Carter or trade back, and he's happy with that because then they'll acquire picks, get a quarterback next year, like Daryl, you've been saying, and get somebody that's really going to help out the defense and him and his legacy. And I'm wondering, the more I think about it, I don't think they're going to go back on that and draft a quarterback there. I wanted your input on that and see what, you know, you're thinking.
Well, I think when it comes to Miles' situation, the Browns are going to make Miles happy by making him the highest paid defender in the NFL. That's what they're going to do to make Miles Garrett happy. I think Nick Bosa, if I'm not mistaken, Andy, is the highest paid. He's like $170 million or something like that over 5 years, signed it like in 22 or 23. That's how they're going to make Miles Garrett happy. That's how they're going to sell Miles Garrett on their plan. We're going to make you the richest defender in NFL history. That's what we're going to do. And then we're going to figure out plan A, B, C, D, E, F, and G, whatever it is they're going to do at quarterback. That's the plan. And I am, you know, it's interesting because Ken and I go back and forth on this very show when I pop on and I aggravate him when I don't show a lot of enthusiasm for the prospects of the 2025 season. And it needles Ken a lot. And I get it. But like I'm not, because I feel like this is a year where you're just going to try and get through it with whatever quarterback you can find. Fingers crossed they can come in here and they can play well. Maybe you win 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 games. All the stars align for you again and you make the playoffs again, but you're really not going to go anywhere. Like, that's best case scenario. Worst case scenario is you go through another season that we just went through, right? But that's why I'm looking at this is a two-year fix for the Browns. Year one, meat and potatoes this offseason. Let's fix the trenches. You got an aging offensive line. You need some work on the defensive line. Secondary might need a little help. And then next year, that's when you want to pounce on the quarterback, the franchise guy. And I realize a lot has to happen between now and 12 months down the road. But I feel like that's the most disciplined path. And I feel like Andrew Berry You know, he's a very process-oriented individual. He's a very intelligent guy. And if you want to really prove that you're a process-oriented individual and that your processes actually work, this is what you do.
You know what the best-kept secret is right now in Northeast Ohio?
I have an idea.
When it comes to sports.
It involves the number 11.
It does. It does involve the number 11. And how about a 9-1 conference record? Who are we talking about? Cleveland State. Yeah, the Vikings. Red hot right now. Let's go to the hotlines, check out, get a little more information on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Daniel Robinson is Cleveland State's basketball coach, and he is up early with us this morning. Coach, how are you? Thank you for joining us.
I'm doing great, guys. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on. Man, you got to feel great about this team right now and what direction you're heading in. Just kind of, like I said going into the interview, like, this is the best-kept secret in Northeast Ohio right now. Just give folks the flavor of the team, will you?
Well, the guys are playing really well right now. Like you mentioned, we're 9-1 in the league. And, man, we've been able to it started on the road actually at Green Bay, so we've got Green Bay coming up here, but really like the way the guys are coming together. They're playing complementary basketball on both ends of the floor. Our defense is carrying us, but our offense most nights is doing well also.
You've won on your last 11, as we've mentioned. You're tied for the second longest current streak. Duke, I guess, has won 12 in a row.
What school is that? I'm not quite sure who they are. Yeah.
Duke is Duke. We don't want to talk about them. But, as the wins go, is like getting sweaty palms time, the pressure building to keep the streak going here, Coach?
Well, we're not at that point, right? We're just trying to get the next one. We've had so many things that we need to improve on, so it's not hard to keep our team's attention. Obviously our guys are excited about where we're at in the league and, all those things, but we're not at the point where, it's like, if we can just get one more, that type of deal.
Do you need like a national radio show like Doug Gottlieb? You think that's like the next step for the Vikings here?
I don't know. I don't know about all that, man.
Has he asked you to be a guest on his show at least?
We actually talked about it. We talked about it when we were there in Green Bay.
All right, well, let's get you on. Let's get you going. Let's get the hype going. Let's get as many as you need in here. That the experience of going to the Wolstein Center, I want fans to start coming out. I want folks to be down there. You play 3:00 against Green Bay at home tomorrow. But the one thing I've always noticed about, especially Cleveland State basketball fans, is, man, they are diehard. They may be 1,600, but they are some of the most diehard basketball fans, and they absolutely love the Vikings through and through. Just kind of talk about the fans, and then let's up the experience a little bit more for some more folks around Northeast Ohio.
Yes, I appreciate you saying that, because that is exactly true. Our fans, they're loyal, and they make our guys feel really important when they show up every night. Now we've got our other student athletes getting involved. Our golf team is like, man, they're down in the student section. They're all over our opponents. And so, we want to continue to create an environment here at the Wolstein Center that's intimidating for folks coming in here.
You're in a pressure cooker of a situation as a mid-major small school. You have to win your conference tournament if you want to go dancing. Just, what's it been like building that program, which has had past success? They've gotten to the NCAA tournament by winning the Horizon League. But just what's it been like for you, building that program and competing in the Horizon League in a way that gives you an opportunity to play deep into March?
Right. Well, that's the thing. You have to build toward March, right? We can be excited about, hey, we won 11 games in a row. At the end of the day, where we're positioned, you're going to have to win the conference tournament to really make this thing special. And so we focus on our daily habits, man. What are we doing every day that'll carry us into March? And building the right habits, so when you get in those pressure situations, you can revert to your habits and not, just try to play with luck or momentum, that type of deal.
Where do you think we're going with the NCAA tournament? Sounds like expansion is going to happen again. I mean, you've won 21 games the last 2 years in a row. Like, yeah. At what point should there just be a bigger consideration for the way teams have played during their regular season? You hear as many as, all right, let's let everyone in the NCAA tournament. Where do you think the tournament should go in the future?
Well, I would love to see if you win your regular season championship that you get an automatic bid for our leagues. Like, because this is the thing is, man, the gauntlet of the regular season, to be able to run that long race and you win the regular season and you happen to lose in your conference tournament. Now it seems like, man, it devalues winning the league. You know, it devalues the race. And so, if that requires expansion, I think that should be under consideration. But, for us mid-major teams, there's a ton of pressure. Like, we live that pressure every week. You know, you live that pressure every week when it comes down to it. If there was a way that the NCAA would give an automatic bid to the conference regular season crown champions, I think that's more than fair.
Do you think an upset in a mid-major tournament devalue the level of competition that, not to take away from that team that pulls off the upset, but do you think that maybe, takes a little away from what the conference might be able to represent in the tournament?
Yeah, well, I don't think it necessarily devalues, but because that's the special thing about March, right? When March happens, everyone has a chance. Once the conference tournament, everyone has a chance. Everyone has a chance. But if you have your conference regular season champion, if they happen to lose, and you have two representatives from that league in the tournament, and that would require expansion.
We talk about NIL and money and players getting paid, especially in football, all the time. Can you just kind of walk me through what it's meant for basketball over the last couple of years? And, whether you're at Cleveland State or you're at Duke, how has NIL changed college basketball?
And absolutely, it's changed the landscape. A wrinkle in the transfer portal, right? The transfer portal was one thing. Okay, you get the transfer portal, you get guys that can transfer without penalty to move from school to school. Now you throw an incentive of, hey, if I could leave, I could leave this situation to better myself financially. Now that adds just another layer of that. For us, when it comes to recruiting in this age of NIL and transfer portal, we still stick to, we don't lead with NIL, we lead with the opportunity. And then, we're not going to win a bidding war. We're capable of having NIL here, but we're not going to win a bidding war. So the type of guys that we recruit, they're still guys looking for opportunities. And, if it happens, if they happen to get NIL, that's just kind of like icing on the cake. But at those other levels, I feel like it's thrown a wrench into the transfer for portal.
The last question I have for you too is that whole notion of I used to always think the portal was fair for athletes if a head coach got fired, right? Or maybe even if an assistant. I mean, you spent so much time at Iowa State, and I can't imagine how much time you spent on the road. And, those families trust you. And if you had the opportunity to go to Cleveland State like you did, and those guys were on board, I've always been able to see a clear path in that in the past of an athlete maybe wanting to follow the coach that has probably, second most important person in their life outside of their family. And being able to use the portal. How can they fix the portal? Does it need to be fixed? Or what kind of rules should be changed for the portal in the future?
Yeah, well, I think there could, the student athletes and programs could benefit from a two-time transfer rule, something like that. If you get to, a third or fourth school, sometimes, you know, you lose the experience of, you know, at the end of the day, when you start your college career, you think about, you know, oftentimes think about leaving a legacy where you were, or, you know, having a place to go back to. My daughter played volleyball at Wisconsin, and she had a fifth year. She graduated. She had a fifth year, and, you know, she could have transferred and went somewhere else for her fifth year. But, you know, she made a great point. She said, I want to leave my legacy here at Wisconsin. This is where I've grown up. This is where I've had the most success. If I go to a, you know, somewhere now, it's just going to be for 1 year. And, you know, so I think we get lost in that sometime with the number of times guys transfer. And I know that there's a situation where guys can make a home after a second or third, you know, opportunity. But that would be one thing that I would think about in terms of how can you this be beneficial for the student athlete as well as the university.
All right, Coach, thank you very much. She didn't tell you that State Street Brats was the reason she really wanted to stay at Wisconsin longer, but that's another story for another day. Hey, good luck tomorrow, 3 o'clock, speaking of Green Bay. So go get them. Go get number 12 tomorrow.
Hey, thanks, guys. Enjoyed it.
Love the conversation. Thank you, Coach. Coach Robinson, Daniel Robinson over at Cleveland State. They are red hot. They've won 11 in a row. They are the best-kept story in Northeast Ohio, secret story. So don't make them a secret anymore. Just kind of peek in a little bit more on Cleveland State.